Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fast Money does start right now. I'm Melissa Lee. Tonight's trader lineup: Guy Adami, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Dan Nathan. Coming up on Fast, more room to run. Morgan Stanley's chief equity strategist says this rally is just getting started. Mike Wilson will join us straight ahead. Plus, Peloton peddling to a new all-time high, but is the stock's red-hot run about to face an uphill climb? And later, Guy is introducing his Windicator. Why he says, take a look at this stock if you want to know where the market is headed next. But we start off with another record close for the Nasdaq, led by, you guessed it, big tech. Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, all hitting record highs today. And here's an incredible stat. The five biggest companies in the S&P 500 now account for nearly a quarter of the index's total market capitalization. So how long can the leadership of these names last? And Tim, haters going to hate, but here we are at record levels.
Yeah, and if you look at the Nasdaq 100 has outperformed the S&P by 20% year to date, but by 13% since those March 18th lows. So we talked about Amazon and a couple, maybe even Facebook, were somewhat defensive here for real reasons related to their core business. But some of the others have just been defensive because of the balance sheets, because of the size of the business, and because these are companies that you know are going to be here tomorrow and have proven to be reasonably profitable. So that's really the story. But it is important that PMIs around the world over the last 24 hours were quite good. You actually had a major recovery across Europe, and I think people are starting to see data points that matter. All that really matters is the Federal Reserve, and that suddenly investors don't seem to care about earnings in 2020 or 2021. And when you base on 2022, you can start to get a normalized profile, but it's a long time to wait.
Yeah, and Karen, that's what you've always said. You know, you got to follow the Fed when it comes to this market.
Right. And I don't see that changing at all. And, Tim talked about Europe. I mean, they're have their own mini Fed going on, taking their buying program up to $1.35 trillion. So I think that, I look at these FANG stocks, I own a bunch of them. They are getting expensive. I don't have an alternative, though. That's the thing, right? What else are you going to do with the money? And sort of the mandate is to be long, but they're not cheap. But they're not crazy expensive either. I mean, Netflix I put in its own category and has its own balance sheet. But Tim said, the Facebook, the Alphabets, the Microsoft, the balance sheets are fantastic. And the growth is there. So hanging on to them.
So when I said haters gonna hate at the top of the show, Dan is laughing because he knows I'm talking about
him.
We're talking about Dan and Guy. I mean, throw Guy into that camp, too. But Dan, go ahead. Why should you hate this rally still? Haven't we proven ourselves here?
Mel,
as Tim mentioned, economic data around the world is improving. We're reopening here in the United States. We seem to be inured to the wave of new cases. 5,000 new cases in Texas, by the way, a record high.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't that kind of the point? Every bear is kind of thrown in the towel. I told you a couple of weeks ago, I'm just far less bearish. The day that the Fed came in, when there was really no good reason to do so, but they said they were going to buy individual corporate bonds, they've made it very clear. Karen and Tim just talked about it. They're going to do whatever it takes. Karen just said she has no alternative. So where is she going to go? She's going to continue to pile into the things that are the perceived winners of the pandemic, which is a really sad expression to say. But when you think about it, what did the pandemic do? It accelerated all these tech trends that we've already had. I guess the risk that I see right now as it relates to the stock market with this, we have a mega cap mania here, right? And then we have on the other side of this, as far as technology is concerned, we have a bit of a bubble in some one-trick pony sort of situations, like if you want to call a Zoom that or whatever, where you're seeing the adoption of their products in a massive, massive scale. And talk about earnings, Karen just said they're starting to basically value the stock market on 2022 earnings, getting back to the 2019 peak. Well, think about all the business that a lot of these companies have actually pulled forward on the bubble side, not the mania side. So the way I see it is that, This is going to continue to be the trade until it's not. But I want to make one really important point. You know, we know mega cap tech has been this massive deflationary force. We have interest rates that are going to stay to zero. At some point, there's got to be some sort of correction that's going to be very, very uncomfortable. Because if you think about who is the market share that Zoom and Slack, they're taking away from the hospitality sector, from the transportation sector. You know, I mean, all this stuff. In the entertainment world, Spotify's rallied 30% in a week. Why? It's taking away from Broadway, from everything, sports, everything that you would have done otherwise. So at some point, there has to be a bit of a reckoning for this sentiment.
If there is a reckon, I mean, I want to get to Guy, but on the point of bubbles, I mean, bubbles are only a problem if it poses some sort of systemic risk to the market. I mean, I don't care about an individual bubble in a name like Zoom. And if Zoom pops and goes down, isn't it, I mean, presumably it's because the other parts of the economy have actually picked up. And so there is a reopening trade, right? So people are off of Zoom and they're going to sports events and concerts and shopping and all that stuff.
Not exactly. I mean, when you have pockets within the stock market that are very susceptible to valuation shocks, there's a lot of negative things that could happen, Mel, once those stocks start careening. That's what the 2000 NASDAQ bubble pop told us. I mean, that put technology in a recession, and it put it in a recession for years. So, I mean, I think it's very easy to be cavalier about this sort of thing. Oh, Zoom's only a $60 billion company trading at 40 times sales. That's kind of abnormal. I just heard Howard Marks from Oaktree on the closing bell say, okay, the S&P 500 trading at 20 times, it's far less than the 30 times it was trading at 20 years ago in the NASDAQ bubble, but there are plenty of bubbles within this stock market mania.
Last but not least, Mr. Adami. Hi.
Hi, Mel. So it's funny, my telephone, my Apple device has been blowing up. Somebody, a bunch of people texted me, they said, Tim looks like he just got off the set of the Lords of Flatbush with all the stuff in his hair. I don't see it. I'm sure Tim looks great. I'm just saying.
Hey, look.
And there's that other saying.
Guy, if I didn't have this stuff in my hair would be taking up the entire screen. Well, if I didn't have this stuff in my hair, the hair would be taking up the entire screen.
It looks
screen.
Like he's so like 2 inches
two weeks
taller
till my first
because
haircut.
Of the hair.
I'm not only the heckler president, I'm also a client.
All right, hold on.
Wow, nice
right, back
job,
off, everybody.
Englewood Cliffs.
Back off.
Yeah, that's 1 inch. That's better. Go ahead, Guy.
Sorry about that. And there's that saying that I learned when I was younger many years ago, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. And that's sort of where we are right now in terms of this rally. And I'll give you an example where there are bubbles. Apple, I think, just to name a stock, I think it's in close to 300 different ETFs. So you're talking about a stock that just gets dragged higher a lot of times on the back of all this passive money investing that's flowing into these names. To me, that's somewhat problematic. Now, what we have said, and again, I'm not some raging Apple bull, never been right, been wrong. But we said a few weeks ago when the stock started to break out, it's like, look, the run probably has some more room in it because volume-wise, you weren't seeing huge volume in the name. Matter of fact, it was trading up on sort of mediocre volume at best. Today was the first day in a while that I've seen Apple, for example, trade north of average volume. I think average volume in Apple's been 39 million shares. It traded 52 million today. That's something you should watch for sure. So, yeah, it's not necessarily that there are bubbles in the historic sense of the word, but I'll tell you, there's a bubble in complacency, and there's a bubble in the fact that everybody seems to think this market is impervious. They've been right. Last night, by the way, is a great example of, you know, one slip of the tongue, and the S&P's down 40 handles. Now, obviously, Mr. Navarro walked a lot of that back, but go back and listen to what he said. Really listen to what he said. And I think there's a lot of truth to this U.S.-China situation getting worse before it gets better.
All right. Well, our next guest says tech's record rally has more to run. Let's bring in Mike Wilson, Chief U.S. Equity Strategist at Morgan Stanley. Mike, great to have you with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Our panel splits down the middle in terms of being on board with this rally and not being on board. So what do you see bringing us higher at this point?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think obviously tech was the leader today. You know, a couple weeks ago it was the, you know, the big cyclical bet. You know, are we going to make this big rotation to value or not? And I guess what I see is that we're getting tremendous breath in the marketplace. You know, a lot of folks, most people like to kind of quote returns year to date. But, you know, since we went into a recession, I think you have to kind of restart the clock. That's what I look at for leadership. So what's been leading since the market lows on March 23rd, that was the recession low. And since that low, the order of outperformance is energy, consumer discretionary, then tech, materials, and industrials. And at the bottom of the barrel, it's Staples.
Hi, it's Karen Petkoff.
So it's basically a cyclical over defensive trade. And that's a very bullish signal. It's basically saying that we're in a new economic cycle, we're in a new bull market, and it's broad. And I think it's a constructive development.
Is there anything wrong with the way the market's structured in that five tech companies make up about a quarter of the market cap of the S&P 500? Because when you say it's broad, you're talking about the gains and not the weightings in the market. But structurally, should that be a concern? Guy was mentioning, you know, a lot of these big stocks are in a lot of different ETFs. And so they get dragged up. And then, you know, if we see any sort of dash for the exits, it's going to exacerbate that on the way down.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'll first one to admit that I'm surprised that that group of stocks is actually, you know, holding up as well as it is, because usually when you get a new cycle, the former leaders tend to shrink in their contribution, but they're holding on to that. They're not outperforming so much, but they're keeping their the size of the market that they've had, and that's unusual. So I'm kind of in Dan's camp, where I do think there's been some excess in spending in the tech space. I don't think it's as bad as it was in the late 90s, but it's the same idea. There's been a little bit of an excess in CapEx in that area, and there's probably been a pull forward of demand, quite frankly, because those companies were the winners in the lockdown. And I think we'll figure that out later this year. That will actually provide some of the fuel to see some of the laggard groups continue to do better. So I don't think it's so much that tech has to go down. It's that it's unlikely that that group is going to be the traditional cyclical outperformer that it's been, because it never really had its cyclical downturn. It's been a beneficiary of the late cycle, and it's been a beneficiary of the early cycle because of the nature of this recession. And that's unusual, and there will be payback, in my view.
You say the biggest risk to the market right now is fiscal stimulus not coming through. That implies that fiscal stimulus is priced in. So what sort of fiscal stimulus do we need to see in order for this market to continue its trajectory?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think a lot of folks are focused on the election now, obviously the virus still, maybe this trade situation, which, you know, as Guy pointed out, kind of, you know, caused a wobble last night. But for me, it's all about the extension of this fiscal package. If we don't get at least $1 trillion, which really means extending the PPP and the unemployment benefits through year end, you can forget about this rally altogether. I mean, you're going to probably have a double dip in the economy. Now, we think it will pass, okay? So that's our base case, but there's, you know, there's always a risk that we snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, and Congress is good at that. So I think that that's the risk that we got to focus on. And if we get that, we could be, you know, there's a chance we get surprised on the upside, that we actually get more than what we're expecting, which is about $1 trillion. These numbers are just gargantuan, by the way, when you say $1 trillion sort of cavalierly. But that's what we're getting, we think, and that will be enough to take the next leg of the bull market.
Mike, great to speak with you, as always.
Thanks, Melissa.
Mike Wilson, Morgan Stanley. Tim Seymour, it sounds like we could be setting up for a major rotation if what Mike says actually comes to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, we've had those rotation periods. I do think there have been moments in the last 3 months, and even before we went into COVID-19, where we did see banks leading, where we did see essentially industrials that were bombed out, the value over growth trade, and then growth over value. A month and a half ago on the show, we were talking about the other trade, right? So I think it's going to be very difficult to dethrone those five companies in the short to medium term. And I think as long as the liquidity is in the markets, it's going to be very difficult to not own those five names for people that are not in those names, and I think they could bid them higher.
All right, let's move on here. Tech stocks not the only big winners in this market. Check out shares of Halliburton, Boeing, Lowe's, Chipotle, all up triple digits from their March lows. So, of course, we thought this would be a perfect time to play a little
Trade It or Fade It.
Yep, that's right. Trade It or Fade It, the game you hate to love, love to hate, whatever it is. Let's kick things off here with Chipotle. It is up 150% from its March bottom. Guy, I know you're a Qdoba kind of guy, but trade it or fade it.
I am a Qdoba person. I like the CMG. They actually serve alcoholic beverages, if you're familiar with it. So I think that's a plus. I'm also pretty sure that McDonald's rues the day that they sort of spun that out. But that's really neither here nor there, Mel. I would say, ready? Trade it. And I'm playing the game properly. A number of reasons why, not least of which, I mean, this was a company that was really in bad shape. They completely turn it around. In 20 years from now, in that Harvard Business Review that you went to that school, they'll write about the turnaround story of CMG. The fact that it's been trading at these levels for the last month or so is a perfect reason for me to say the market doesn't give you that long a time to sell the highs, which in my world means it's going higher. Despite valuation, they seem to have the continued growth and continued customer traffic to support it. Trade it.
But valuation, my very short-haired friend Guy, is one of the reasons why you don't want to own this stock. And, you know, while CEO Nichols done a fantastic job with their digital business and their loyalty programs, you can't have it both ways. How is their business stronger on the back of COVID-19? And that's effectively what we've priced into this stock, even though they have been a market share taker. And certainly those programs are important. I will be fading this stock.
All right. Let's move on to Lowe's here, also up more than double from its March lows. Dan Nathan, trade it or fade it?
I think you fade this one here, Mel. I mean, this stock sold off from 125 down to about $60 in about a month, and now it's up 110 or 20% or so. I mean, here's one where this is a company whose business was not particularly adversely affected by the pandemic. I mean, they weren't shut down. Their earnings and sales year over year are supposed to be down, you know, not too bad from the 2019 levels, and it trades at a pretty reasonable valuation, about 19 times. My only issue is if you look at like a 5 or 6 year chart, the price action in just the last 4 months really encapsulates the slow, steady grind higher over that time period. I would say if you draw a trend line from the 2015 lows and you match it to each of the top, it's getting pretty well extended. So I'd expect a pullback here, and that's when you reload on a name like this. This is a stock that you probably never sell unless Amazon figures out how to displace the home improvement sector.
Can I just disagree with Dan for a second?
Always, every
yes.
day, all the time.
Fade it.
Always. All right. I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to trade it. So I agree with some of the points that he made, like, you know, this is not a bad space to be in during COVID. But I look at it a little bit differently. I look at it a bit before any of this happened. They were just at the beginning of a turnaround, right? So Marvin Ellison came in and he's been making very significant changes. And if I look at the margins that Home Depot has, right, 9% and change versus where Lowe's is, 6% and change, maybe they don't get to where Home Depot is, but if they can make half the difference up, right, that would be very, very good, I think, for Lowe's stock. And so I also continue to think that even if we find a cure, even if there that people are out and about again and not as home as much, they're still going to be home a lot. And I think the work from home is going to be helping them. Also, we're coming into the time of year people really want to spend on their homes and do projects and gardening and barbecue and all that kind of stuff. So the seasonality of it. But I really think, even outside of COVID, it was one to own going into it because I really think Ellison's turnaround is working and will continue to work.
All right. Next up, Halliburton. It's up a whopping 200% from March lows, though still well off its 52-week high. So, Tim, trade it or fade it?
Yeah, I trade it. I know it's difficult times in the sector and the entire oil services space, but these guys are free cash flow positive. They have downshifted on OPEX. They have technology offerings that will help them in a difficult and keep them a leader. This is a stock that will go higher.
Yeah, so, you know, Tim, I'm going to fade this one here. I mean, obviously, this was a company the drillers were having a very tough time, you know, prior to the pandemic. I just think you have to look at the XLE here. It's kind of rolling over. Crude oil filled in that gap. The PMIs that you referenced before, good in Europe, good relative to expectations. Here, they're a little worse than expectations. I think you're going to start seeing the V portion turn into a little bit of a W as a global recovery here. And I think names like Halliburton are going to be very susceptible to, kind of second wave of selling.
All right. Last but not least, Boeing, also of triple digits. So, Karen, what do you say? Trade it or fade it?
You know, I'd be more inclined to fade it because obviously, the effect on the airlines and therefore the effect on Boeing is enormous. They obviously came into this with plenty of troubles of their own before that. And I know that the stock has rallied, not as sharply as some, but what the rally in the stock doesn't take into account is how much additional debt there is on Boeing now, right? That adds to the enterprise value. It should affect valuation. So since I'm lukewarm at best on the airlines, I can't help but be meh, as you would say, on Boeing, so I'm a fade it.
I pronounce it Mech, as you know, number one. One of my favorite moments in the history of the 37 years of Fast Money is when Karen said, I would agree with Dan, but then we'd both be wrong. I think that's just genius, number two. And number three, I'm with Karen on this one. I think you're going to get a shot to buy this probably in the mid-160s. Let's call it 165. And lastly, my bonus point, how come everybody else got the little buzzers or ding? I didn't get my my requisite ding ding when I said trade Chipotle, and that upsets
me. Yeah, you did. You got it before you even said trade it. There's we're so baby. Inside your mind.
Sorry.
We knew what was coming out of your lips. All right. Well played, guys. You all follow the rules. Still ahead on Fast Money, biotech breaking out today, the double dose of vaccine headlines that sent the sector to record highs. And later, Guy unveils his Windicator, why he says to look to this stock if you want to know where the market is headed next. All that and more when Fast Money returns.
For more than a decade, Comcast has been committed to bridging the digital divide and connecting millions to affordable high-speed internet. But the barriers to get connected go well beyond affordability. Through Project Up, Comcast is committing $1 billion to reach millions with digital skills training, resources, and opportunities needed to succeed in a digital world. Project Up, building a future of unlimited possibilities. Learn more at comcast.com/projectup.
Welcome back to Fast Money. New updates on the race to develop a coronavirus vaccine as cases surge in several states. Meg Terrell joins us with the very latest. Hey, Meg.
Hey, Melissa. Well, Sanofi providing an update on its plans today, saying now that its program in partnership with GlaxoSmithKline could be in human clinical trials in September and potentially in a larger phase 3 efficacy study by the end of the year or early 2021. Now, that's still a few months behind where other companies are, but Sanofi's CEO pointing out that their technology is one of the only ones that's proven in an approved vaccine already. They have a flu vaccine based on this technology. Separately, they also have a partnership with Translate Bio, and you can see that stock's up 47% today on an expanded partnership. They're going to work together on other vaccines too, not just the COVID vaccine, and that's an mRNA platform similar to Moderna's, and that's a little bit further behind the GlaxoSmithKline Sanofi vaccine. So Sanofi, they're having two different COVID tracks ongoing. Meanwhile, the first efficacy trials in the United States, those 30,000-person trials, expected to start in July from Moderna and Pfizer. AstraZeneca close on their heels, potentially starting July or August with their trial. Johnson & Johnson expected in September. And then, of course, as we mentioned, GSK, Sanofi at the end of the year. So these big companies, Mel, all gearing up to start these large-scale efficacy studies within weeks. Back
so
over to you.
What is the earliest projection by a company, Meg, for a vaccine hitting the market or getting FDA approval?
Well, we've seen from some companies like AstraZeneca that they think they could deliver this vaccine by October if things go well. Pfizer has made similar projections. But today, Dr. Fauci was testifying on the Hill. He reiterated the end of 2020, early 2021 timeline for the earliest these vaccines could be ready. It's all going to depend upon the rate of infection in these large-scale efficacy trials, because the more infection there is, the faster they will prove that they work.
All right. Meg, thank you. Meg Terrell keeping all straight for us. By the way, the IBB NASDAQ Biotech ETF hitting a brand new high today. So let's trade this one. Guy, what do you say?
Yeah, and this is as often as I'm wrong, which is quite often if you watch the show. One of the things we've gotten right collectively is this IBB, and it is absolutely breaking out to the upside, and I think it will continue. However, and this is not me talking out of both sides of my mouth, if you want the real indicator as to the real breakout, it comes in the form of Amgen. And if you look, Amgen made an all-time high of $244.99 mid-December, pulled back, obviously, with everything else. And now here we are at $238. You get a close above $245 in Amgen, and they report, I think, on July 20th, and it's off to the races. So absolutely like IBB, if you want to get granular, keep an eye on Amgen.
Tim?
Yeah, we talked about also that the vaccine is not necessarily a boom for any of these players. We certainly talked about it in the context of Gilead. I think the reason the IBB, I would argue this is a five-year breakout. And you know, where we bought them somewhere around 80 and now up in the 240s. I mean, you have a case where you've got fantastic balance sheets, you've got optionality, and you have a handful of companies that I do think have M&A as a potential tailwind, although, you know, there are some that people look at as a headwind. But I think you stay there with the kind of liquidity we have out there. People have been playing big biotech over big pharma. That trade continues to work.
All right, coming up. The fake food fight, what Starbucks just did that sent shares of Beyond Meat tumbling today. But first, Guy is unveiling his Windicator. That's a hint. He says, look to this stock if you want to know where the market is headed from here. He will explain when Fast Money returns.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Wondering where we may be headed next? Well, Guy says there is one stock that could be a good windication. Guy, what is it?
You know, our crack staff back in EC, that stands for Englewood Cliffs, came up with it. It's genius, by the way. It's brilliant. And you know what? It's the Windicator because it's Wynn Resorts. Now, as I've mentioned many times, there's a bit of Rain Man in me. And March 18th, I believe, was a Wednesday. And I recall both Tim and I were on that night with Brian Sullivan hosting, and it was a pretty miserable day in the broader market. But we said, "When Brian, you know what? Little green shoots here. Wynn traded down to, I think, 35 or so, closed around 43. You could take some solace from that." And on March 20th, which was obviously Friday, we said the same thing. Look at Wynn in relation to the broader market. Well, my point there, and I'm making it because Wynn led the broader market by about a week, week and a half in terms of bottoming out and turning. Then we went on to say, as the stock continued to go higher, was this stock, and Tim says this all the time, less bad news is when you buy these things. It's getting less bad, which is, means the stock's going to rally more, and that's what happened. We actually said that you get a decent tape, this is a $100 name. Now why do I mention it? Because go back about a week and a half or so, Wynn topped out at 109. Look at it today, it's 84. So I'm coming to the conclusion, just the way Wynn let us out in mid-March, Wynn might be trying to tell us something now. I'm not suggesting to buy or sell Wynn. I'm just looking at Wynn as a potential indicator. And quite frankly, it's worked before. Why shouldn't it work again, Melissa? Back to you.
If you could tell me the temperature on March 18th, then I would believe your Rain Man comment.
I believe the temperature was 47 degrees Fahrenheit. Time of the show.
All right. So if you buy Guy's Windicator... No way. You're probably asking, where's Wynn headed from here, right? Legitimate question. Let's go off the chart to Todd Gordon of Ascent Wealth Partners. Todd, where do you see Wynn going?
Hey, guys. So as Guy mentioned, there's definitely a bullish development. If you look at the long-term chart at Wynn, there was a pair of 80% declines into Guy's 47-degree day. It held support. It rallied. It's encouraging. But it's got a lot of wood to chop up around the 105. Generally, Guy said 109. So 105 has got a lot to prove. From a fundamental point of view, we just don't see it. I don't think it's kind of helpful as a reopening economy stock. It's very susceptible to U.S.-China relationships. Casino stocks like Wynn are heavily influenced by the Chinese government. There's a report that came out that gambling in Macau, I think, is seven times larger than Vegas. Two of the properties, two of Wynn's are Vegas, three are Macau. So I don't know. I just got a lot of debt. It's going to make it vulnerable. And, of course, its revenue would be susceptible to sort of looser regulations for online gambling. I think it's got something to prove still.
All right. So if you think, Todd, that Guy's Windicator is baloney, what do you see as the best indicator in the market?
I see something to prove. I wouldn't go, I call anything the great guy dummy says is baloney. No.
I would.
No. Something to, sorry, what was that?
I would.
Okay. That's why you're the boss. So XLK, you know, I have to go with what's working. I love technology. You know, I think this economy, and I think we as a civilization were on a set timeline to become more automated, and COVID just accelerated. I say stay with what's working. The tech names are going to reinvent the way that we spend our discretionary dollars. I think it was going to happen anyway. So I like technology. I'm going to use it until it's not working. Our global growth portfolio is kind of focused on the technology and is reflecting it. So one thing that I would draw your attention to, kind of pulling back from only technology, is looking at the SPX RSP. RSP is the equal weighted S&P ETF put out by Invesco. And what's interesting is a lot of people are saying the rally's getting very thin up here. But if you look, the RSP-SPX ratio has moved up sharply since May 10th. And that's sort of indicating that we're getting a broad-based rally. The RSP and the SPX have gone into a little bit of consolidation, right, while the NASDAQ has taken another leg higher. So I think the rest of the market's kind of taking a breather, so I'm continuing to stay bullish. And if we can, if we have time, if you take a big step back and look at all the rallies that have ensued since the credit crisis low of 89, I think it was like 82%, 87%, 64%. We've seen three pretty significant rallies. Guys, we're just 42% from those March lows. So, you know, I think we have more room to go. And if we're using history to predict what's going to happen in the future, a 64% rally puts us at like 3,600 in the S&P. So we're continuing to remain bullish.
All right. Todd, thanks. Good to speak with you.
You guys too.
Dan Nathan, I don't know if you have thoughts about the Windicator or if you've got your own.
You know I have my own, Mel. I have the J.P. Morgan indicator. ticker is JPM. That's how that one comes out there, Guy. You know, listen, this is one where it's still down 30% from its highs. Yeah, it's up 30% from its lows. You know, that is a relative underperformance there versus the S&P, versus the NASDAQ, versus everything. And it just doesn't act well. And I think, you know, what the bank stocks, the money center banks in particular, are telling you is that we are going to see, you know, higher defaults, higher levels of bankruptcy. We're going to see possibly a commercial real estate crisis in the second half of this year, early next year. And to me, I think the direction of the banks, you know, they've come in pretty hard. Guy nailed J.P. Morgan. When it was 90 bucks, he says going to 115. Well, it stopped on a dime at its 200-day moving average, and now is back below 100. So to me, I just don't think you want to see this one breaking 90 anytime soon. It will not augur well, as Guy likes to say, for the broad market, in my opinion.
Karen, your thoughts on the J.P. Morgan indicator?
Morganator.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm long. I love J.P. Morgan. I love Jamie Dimon. But it doesn't act well. But and I've thought for a long time that there is a disconnect between the broader market and the banks, the money center banks. And, you know, we'll get a lot more clarity on Thursday when we see the stress test. And I don't believe that J.P. Morgan will cut their dividend.
And Tim, just quickly, you're looking at transports, the old Dow theory.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important. If you think about the transports, and so the IYT is measuring the entire sector, including the rails and FedEx as heavyweights, basically double top back in 2018. A lot of this was trade war. That's where we saw, I think, the peak of truly the economy and where we actually saw economic growth that was becoming very well rounded and starting to thrust into high gear. And then we lost it. So I want to see the transports come back. And at times in this point, Dan's right to bring up the banks. I think the transports are more important when talking about the breadth of the economy. And yes, Dow theory has proven to be important. It's not the only rule. But transports have still lagged. We need to see transports catch up.
All right, coming up, the surprising stock that has just zoomed past Zoom to claim the title of work from home winner. And later, the sobering new numbers on how much booze we are buying and drinking while on lockdown, what it means for liquor makers. Fast Money's back in two.
It's not healthy to have people who are buying stocks for fun. And it reminds me of the people who were day trading in 1999 and declaring day trading, you know, a can't miss strategy.
That was legendary investor Howard Marks talking about the retail trading boom, and we're learning more about what the retail traders were trading today. Kate Rudy's got all the details. Hey, Kate.
Hey, Melissa. Surprisingly, it's not Zoom or Peloton. Fastly is now one of the best performing stocks of the stay-at-home era, and it's a fan favorite among retail investors. Fastly shares hitting a 52-week high, up 4% on Tuesday, following last week's 36% surge. The stock has also spiked in popularity on trading app Robinhood. According to third-party aggregator RobinTrack, the number of clients holding the stock on Robinhood increased by 18%. Fastly's technology is used by Shopify, Spotify, and Slack, which are all seeing usage soar while people work from home. Melissa?
Interesting name. Kate, thanks. Kate Rooney. From one red-hot stay-at-home stock to another, Peloton, as Kate mentioned, hitting records today after Cowen increased its price target to a new street high of $70 a share. The exercise bike maker has more than doubled this quarter. So can it keep pedaling higher? Dan, you have a Peloton tread in your background, in fact.
I do. I love it. I mean, listen, I had it before this thing. Obviously, if you're this fit, you need some tools, some pretty good tools to stay that way. And that's what I did pre-pandemic. Right. I was kind of prescient, as some might say. I mean, listen, the whole panel, other than Tim, obviously doesn't work out. We all use these things. They're great devices, but they're expensive devices. And, you know, the real opportunity, I think, here is as the digital strategy broadens out, it fits into a lot of themes that we were talking about in all these stock market manias that are going on right now. But it's just what sort of technology can be spread out that's not dependent on hardware? Obviously, they are right now. But I think that the pandemic, if it taught us anything, is that cloud-based services like this that are highly repeatable are going to be very popular going forward.
The one stat in this report that really jumped out at me is how engaged the subscriber base is. An average of 17.7 workouts per month. I mean, that's extraordinary, Guy, and that just shows you that people are not just, this is not maybe not just a fad, but the more you're engaged with this, the more you're likely to hang on to this.
100%. And we've talked about this stock for quite some time. We've been bullish on this name. And now, you know, the analyst community seems to be piggybacking the Fast Money show, which is a smart thing to do. I'm on that bike. I'll get on that sucker later tonight. I'm engaged. My man Dennis Morton, I've been on the same ride 10 times, one of his classic rides.
I knew it.
Go
classic
figure
rock.
That out.
Is it a 30 or 45 minute?
It's not just a hardware company. People will say valuation is crazy.
What? Guy, can you hear me? I think I lost his connection. Well, everybody but Guy can hear me. America can hear me, at least. Okay. Karen, what did you make of this note? I know you're on that bike every day pretty much, too.
I'm on the bike a lot. I have more than one in the city, one here. I think it does capture you, right? But the question is for how long, right? What kind of churn that month? The bike itself is expensive, so it's a super, super expensive razor. And then the blades are not cheap either. I wonder, though, at what point does valuation have to matter? And so I don't own the stock. I feel like this will be another one where I love the product, don't own the stock, and it, you know, trades like Beyond Meat or something like that. But the product is great. I understand the ecosystem. That argument makes sense to me. I just don't know what the right price to pay. And what happens when things open up in the summer and people are out more and they're like, oh, you know what, maybe I won't use the bike as much. Maybe I'll leave it as sort of a hanger for my clothes, you know, in my bedroom and then forget that I have it, sort of. I don't know. We'll see the churn as it evolves.
The fate of many a Nordic Track and Bowflex, I'm sure. All right, coming up, why options traders say it's a buyer's market for this hot housing play. We'll break down the action straight ahead. Plus, there's a new meatless sandwich on the market. Should you sink your teeth into this one, or will it leave you feeling queasy? We got that trade when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. New home sales surging in May, climbing a better than expected 17%. That news giving the home builder ETF a nice boost, and options traders are betting on even bigger gains when one key name reports results tomorrow. Mike Coe, as always, got the action. Mike.
Hi, Melissa. Yeah, so we're taking a look at KB Homes today. This one traded more than two times its average daily call volume, and right now the options market is implying a move of about 7%. That's considerably higher than the 4.5% or so that it has averaged over the last 8 quarters. And most of that activity was concentrated in the July 35 calls. Those were trading for about $2. And buyers of those calls are betting that the stock is going to rise above that $35 strike price by at least the $2 in premium that they paid by July expiration, which is Friday the 17th. And one might assume with these bullish bets that they're targeting the February highs of around $40.
Tim, you got thoughts on housing?
Well, I tell you, if you look at the move in the housing stocks, on some level, they've also been windicators of sorts. And if you think about the supply issues and the pent-up demand, the fact that they're meeting where there is at least a demographic kind of trend for that demand, I should say. I think it goes higher. I think valuations in a couple of the big boys. I like Pulte. I think the growth prospects remain there. These stocks have had a big move, but I think that with rates where they are, people are buying more house than they can afford.
Guy, you perked up when you heard Tim mention windicator.
Like no, it's no, you- I just think we've yes, no, we've stumbled upon yet another great fast money
gold.
Thing. The windicator, I think it's here. It's gold. What's that from? That's from that. What's the name of that show? Dan knows that one.
The what? Seinfeld.
Jerry
the
Springer.
Seinfeld.
Jerry Springer.
Gold,
Jerry.
Stay gold.
What's
gold.
His name?
Stay yeah. Gold Pony.
I
gold.
Never saw it, by the way.
Nicely done, guys. Thanks, Mike, for that. For more OA, full show is Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Coming up, the meatless mania is heating up. Our Aditi Roy has her finger on the pulse and her hands on the newest sandwich. Aditi.
Here it is. This is the Starbucks Impossible Breakfast Sandwich. And Impossible Foods believes this is the key to them winning breakfast over Beyond Meat. We'll show you the comparison coming up in a live report.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Big interview coming your way at the top of the hour. Jim Cramer sitting down with the CEO of Impossible Foods. So be sure to catch that exclusive interview tonight on Mad Money. Impossible, meantime, in the news today after Starbucks debuted its new Impossible Breakfast Sandwich. Let's get to Aditi Roy with all the juicy details. Aditi.
Hi, Melissa. Impossible has nabbed a lot of big partnerships with restaurant chains, but this is the biggest one yet. By partnering with Starbucks, Impossible is tripling the number of eateries carrying its latest product, breakfast sausage. The Impossible breakfast sandwich will be available at 15,000 U.S. Starbucks stores. Just last week, Burger King announced it's rolling out the Impossible Croissant Sandwich at its 7,500 U.S. stores. But Beyond Meat is a competitive rival. It brought its breakfast sausage to market before Impossible brought theirs, and the company's products are on breakfast menus at Dunkin' Donuts, Carl's Jr., Hardee's, and Starbucks Canada. While Beyond shares are off 4% today on the regular session upon the Impossible news, they're still going strong overall this quarter, up around 130%. Beyond CEO Ethan Brown had guided investors during the company's last earnings call that the rollout of its breakfast foods would be slowed down by the pandemic. The company has been more focused lately on expanding its grocery offerings. For its part, Impossible Foods says it plans to expand its retail footprint by 20x by the end of the year. And today, Melissa, they are focusing on this sandwich rollout.
Can you hold that up, Aditi? Because I've seen pictures of this Impossible yes. sandwich all day long mm-hmm. on Starbucks, and it looked absolutely delicious in the photos. And then when you picked that thing up, I thought, ugh, that looks terrible. Yeah. I mean, look at the comparison. Oh. I mean, you just can't. It doesn't even look edible compared to the pictures. I mean, the pictures look fantastic, just magnificent.
It's so funny. It's, there's a ciabatta roll, so that's different than the English muffin. I'm more of an English muffin fan. This egg is fried as opposed to like that omelet or a scrambled egg kind of patty that they have. I don't know necessarily if the traditional sausage sandwich, if I just get it and, you know, don't dress it up and everything and show it to you, I don't know if that's necessarily going to look more appealing.
Is it good?
But if you want, I can take a bite.
Yeah.
Let me find out, right?
Yeah.
This is very
hard to do.
Get in there. Get in there.
We all want to know.
I'm getting there.
Such a good sport. Aditi's such a good sport.
You know what? It is. Because I like the traditional sausage sandwich, but they do a really good job of emulating this. I would almost say that the sausage is more similar to the traditional sausage than even the burger is. I think they do a really good job emulating the sausage. It's good.
Aditi,
I like it.
Thank you. Thank you for telling America
for what
how
it's
it is.
Worth.
Aditi Roy, Guy, you know, I thought of you because you've had these sorts of products before, and this is a breakfast sandwich. So many Americans out there will be pairing up the sandwich with this alt meat and coffee.
Yeah, but it's a lethal combination.
Whoa.
You know, it's interesting. Well, I'm trying. You know, one thing we try to do here on Fast Money is be honest. And I'm honest to a fault. And what I'll tell you, and Dan Nathan knows, there's a Starbucks on the corner of 43rd and Broadway. And when Dan's on the show, I will often bring him iced coffees. Mm-hmm. I mention that because there's no water closet in that Starbucks. And if they're going to implement this sandwich, my suggestion would be to have facilities for the patrons, if you know what I mean.
Got it. Coming up, we've got some booze news for you. The sobering new stats about how much we are drinking during this pandemic. Much more of that straight ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got some booze news. Turns out Americans are drinking less. Yes, less during this pandemic. Check out the total alcohol sales this year versus last year. Researchers say while more Americans are buying alcohol to drink in home, it's not enough to offset lost sales at bars, restaurants, and sporting venues. Tim, you're a bar owner. What's your take on this story?
Yeah, I'm bumming, I can tell you. And I'm not sure how they're going to come back, how voracious they will be. There will be some. And I think some of the trends, if you look overall, what trends were like in beer and wine sales, there was contraction. There's been global consolidation. Constellation reports next week. They have actually been showing margin progression. They've also spun off a couple brands. And I think it's probably the best of breed. It's a name I'm long. And it's a name that I'll ride through. It's had a big rally off the bottom. But these are very interesting trends that are sorting themselves out. People are more health conscious. People are concerned about keeping their immunity system as high as possible. And then I think at some point, people just don't go out, right? So when you're not going out, you're not consuming those unnecessary alcoholic beverages. Not that I've ever done that, but
oh,
that's
never.
What's going on.
And we've never seen it either. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn, no. Karen.
Yes, mine is IEV. This is a European ETF. And I feel like, you know, they've got their own Fed action with the $1.3 trillion from the ECB. So IEV.
Dan.
For the Vanguard European ETF.
Yeah, so in March, crude oil broke down below 40 and it just absolutely cratered. Carter Braxton Worth thinks you sell oil. That means to me you sell the XLE here also.
Tim.
Starbucks with or without the impossible.
Guy.
Chicken burrito, no beans, extra chicken, white rice, CMG.
Thanks for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast. Meantime, Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura's been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.